This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. It's our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio with us. We have an interesting topic today. It's titled Rabies.
That's right.
And you know, for George and I, it felt like deja vu because we did this show exactly with our same guest about 4 years ago and it felt like we're doing it all over again. Like, what on earth happened?
It's a refreshing course.
It is, for sure, because in 2017, up to 2017 at least, Malaysia was declared free of rabies, or the peninsula Malaysia was declared free of rabies until 2017 when we had another case. We'll have that verified by our guest today who's joining us, Dr. Vigneshwaran Muthu. He's a Senior Principal Assistant Director of Zoonosis Sector Disease Control Division, Ministry of Health, because today's topic is about rabies. The reason we're talking about rabies today is because the total number of cases has risen to 19 as of June this year compared to 2017. And so what have we done to manage and reduce the spread of rabies is what we're going to be exploring today. How are you today, George?
I'm good.
Really?
Well, at least it's not raining out there. Right?
No, it's a beautiful,
it's a beautiful Friday.
Friday.
It's unusual. And we're talking about a topic that maybe we can just involve some of the Klang Valley listeners.
Yes.
Because you know, it's a disease that we all thought it's kind of like a ancient, buried, done and dusted, but it's emerging. And then should we be fearful? I think that would be a good conversation to have.
We also had this conversation not too long ago about rabies in Penang and in the northern states of Malaysia.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I think it was Dr. Vick who actually spoke about how dogs have no passports, so they come through from southern Thailand to Malaysia,
right?
Okay, you know?
Yeah, so don't say anything. Meera doesn't forget.
No, I don't. But today we're going to be focusing a little bit more on Sarawak because that's where the problem seems to be. If you have a question for him, give us a call. The number is 7732900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Dr. Vick, you want to just give us a status as to where we are today with rabies? And what happened? This one guy just came along in June. He was scratched by a dog and now he's been the 19th victim, hasn't he?
Yeah. As for this year, we have 3 cases of rabies confirmed cases, and all 3 in Sarawak. But here in Peninsula Malaysia, we have been free of human rabies since 1998.
Okay.
So I would congratulate the Department of Veterinary Services to keeping the fort safe for our people here.
So
in
the Penang
case? Yeah, what about the Penang one? Yeah.
Yeah. Penang one happened in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And we spoke
about
it. But
you said 1998?
We were free from it.
Yeah. You see, a human case of rabies, the last human case rabies in Semenanjung Malaysia or Peninsula Malaysia was way back in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
The canine outbreak of rabies happened in 2015.
I see. Okay, George, there's a big difference there.
That's right. Okay.
So you
human
have to,
and non-human. All right, okay.
So you must understand, first thing is zoonotic diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Zoonotic diseases are diseases that cross over to the humans.
Right.
And the animals are vertebrate animals.
Sure.
So now, what kind of our interface that we are talking about is wildlife, livestock, pets, and also humans.
Right.
So when you have a host reservoir of this disease,
which is in the animals,
what happens is that when there's interaction between humans and that particular host animal, zoonotic agents tend to jump hosts and establish a
new host, at reservoir.
For example, HIV.
Uh-huh.
HIV was monkey HIV.
Mm-hmm.
But when the host started eating the bush meat or monkey meat,
right,
and the virus went into the humans.
Is that confirmed?
Yeah. And they adapted to the human host.
As a new host.
So, as a new host and established the human-to-human transmission.
Mm-hmm.
Now, coming back to rabies.
Yeah, just rabies, for the benefit of listeners,
yes,
exactly what is it and what sort of, like, how long has this disease been around?
Okay, according to the ancient books, it has been there for the past 2,000 years before Christ.
Oh, really?
B.C.
All right.
Now it's 2019.
Okay.
So let's talk about 4,000 years of rabies documentation.
Wow.
Now, What is the rabies cases being registered throughout the world? 55 to 60,000 death, rabies death a year.
Right.
And we have nearly about 2 billion population exposed to canine rabies.
Right.
And this part of the world, talking about Asia, Southeast Asia, India, China, Africa, these places, the reservoir is dogs.
Mm.
And because of the interaction between humans and dogs, dog is human's best friend.
Mm.
And we don't, and they are the reservoir of rabies.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is that when the dog get infected with rabies and they develop encephalitis,
mm.
and what happens, they tend to pass the virus to other hosts, example humans, mm-hmm. by biting.
Right.
So each milliliter of their saliva has 1 million viral particle.
Lots of virus that will pass.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So this is the transmission event. And for a human layman person to tell, hey, is my dog infected with rabies or not? We can't predict that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why zoonotic diseases, they don't happen like a human influenza pandemic and so on. So sporadically, there are cases where they are exposed to, humans especially, exposed to bites or licks by the dog or by the rabid dog animal, and also scratch.
So in the northern part of Malaysia,
okay.
How did you realize that there was a rabies spread amongst the dogs in the area?
Okay.
Because they didn't bite any human dog.
Right.
Humans weren't affected
okay.
by it, right?
Now, there where it comes, the collaboration between the Department of Veterinary Services and the Ministry of Health.
Mm-hmm.
We have established an immune belt area over the northern part of Malaysia that is about 50 to 80 kilometers from our southern border neighbor country.
Mm-hmm.
Because our southern border neighbor country, rabies is endemic. And from time to time, there is a outbreak among the canines.
Right.
Now, as what Mira told, dogs does not carry passport.
Actually,
dogs,
you mentioned that.
Yeah. She echoed
okay.
my message. Dogs move
mm-hmm.
from one side to another side, especially when there's a control.
Right.
Dogs have sense that they can sense the guys who are driving the control vehicle
mm-hmm.
that controls the dog population 2 kilometers away.
Mm.
Wow.
So when they can sense this vehicle, they will move. And as you know, when they move from one place to another place, dogs are territorial.
Mm.
They tend to fight.
Right.
So when a dog is having the virus inside its nerves and is about to get the encephalitis and so on.
Mm-hmm.
When they develop encephalitis, so again, the rabies comes in two forms.
Mm-hmm.
One is a furious form that are 80% of the dogs or humans, and the dumb form or the paralytic form in the human.
Mm-hmm.
What is it is, unprovokedly they are angry and they start biting.
Right.
Now, when they move from one area to another area, the dogs that are in that particular area will fight with these new dogs that come into their area.
Because they're territorial.
Territorial.
Like that. So then
first
it spreads.
Thing. Yeah. How does the other way of this virus being spread is when they mate.
Ah.
Dogs, after some time, they will look for another mate.
Right.
And when there is a mating season, what happens is that the virus being transmitted from one dog to another.
Right, okay. So that's what happened in 2015,
okay.
you said.
No, not yet.
Okay.
Oh.
So in this immune belt, there are certain activities being done where any bite case that comes to the Ministry of Health facilities, like hospitals or clinics, those bites are recorded and notified to the veterinary department.
Okay, can you explain what an immune belt is?
Okay, I just explained to you. Immune belt is where certain activities being compulsory activities are being done, and it is legislative. That means there's a law that binds the immune belt, where the Department of Veterinary Services, what they do is they license all dogs. All dogs in that immune belt are given yearly vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
For rabies. This happened since 1954. So the other activities are movement. So whatever dogs that humans are bringing in, they should be quarantined at the border.
And these are belts because these are high-risk areas.
Yes.
Okay.
And at the same time, the collaboration between Ministry of Health and Veterinary Services. Now, let's say in 2015, what happened? A dog bit the owner. The owner came to the clinic and took his, whatever, wound management and so on.
Okay.
And he told his own dog beat him.
Okay.
Now, what we did, we told our Department of Veterinary Services colleagues in Perlis.
Right.
They went and looked for the dog and they monitored the dog for the next 10 days.
Is it possible to even find stray dog and then identify which one?
This is the owner's dog.
The owner's dog.
Owner's dog. And also, the stray dog is easy to find because dogs don't move
too far
when they are rabid. Once they are rabid, they only move around within 1 kilometer.
Okay.
All right. So once they found that dog, they quarantined the dog or observed the dog. The dog died 3 days after that.
Uh-huh.
They checked the brain for
rabies. Rabies,
the Niger bodies and so on. It was positive. Now, as we know, the rabies incubation period to human is about 3 weeks to 3 months.
Yes.
So that is the time period we have.
To monitor the human.
Human. So we call back the person. We call back the person who has been bitten by his dog, and we provided the
not supportive treatment.
We gave him the anti-rabies vaccine that is the post-exposure prophylaxis, 4 doses that we start from day zero.
But I thought hardly anyone ever survived the rabies infection.
As long as you have not got your encephalitis, the virus has not gone to your brain, you can always prevent. That's why they say it, fatal disease, but preventable disease.
Right.
Ah, fatal, but preventable. Okay, yeah. So how do you prevent it?
Again, once we know that the dog is positive for rabies,
yep,
the person should go, or not should go, must have their 4 doses of pre-exposure prophylaxis.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Now, we have multiple ways of giving this vaccine, but for generally it is intramuscular, given 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
So the day that the person comes to us for the first dose is considered as day zero.
Do you not? I mean, it sounds like it's quite cumbersome. You have to find a dog, you incubate, you know, you actually quarantine the dogs, you find out whether the dog develop any symptoms. Why don't you just simply just inject anybody who has actually dog bite with rabies vaccines and also the antibodies?
Okay. So WHO's recommendation says you don't vaccinate the whole population for rabies.
Okay, that's clear because it's relatively rare disease. Yeah, I mean, in the last 6 months, we only have 3 cases.
Okay. But for
dog bites,
we train our doctors to get a good history of the dog. Is it unprovoked bite? What type of bite? What is the dog status? Now, is it ill or is it well? Is it eating well? Or is it your own dog? Is it a stray dog? Is it your own dog that strays throughout the day and comes back at night? After eliciting a good history, the clinician has his prerogative to provide the PEP, or we can still wait for the patient to receive their PEP because why? Of that long incubation period.
Right.
And also, we look at the status of the dog.
Okay.
Or the geographical area of that place, whether that it is an immune belt, or is it an outbreak area, or is it not an outbreak area before. Because for surveillance purposes, our Department of Veterinary Services, they have surveillance for certain diseases that they do throughout the year. And from that information, we also can find out whether there's a threat of rabies in that geographical area.
Okay. Oh. So you have how many immune belts in the peninsula?
Only one.
Just one belt.
The whole peninsula.
One belt. No, not the whole peninsula. We have few districts in Kelantan, a few districts in Perak, a few districts in Kedah, Langkawi, and also the whole of Perlis.
All that under one belt?
Yes.
Right, the northern states, northern states. Including Kelantan as well.
Mm, yeah.
Did you have stray dog problem in Kelantan?
Yeah.
Right. Are you from Kelantan?
Yes, he is.
Right. Which part of Kelantan?
I'm from Kota Baru.
Oh, Tubit.
Don't you know he shows up all the time?
That's right, yeah. Oh, okay. Do you get Kelantan?
Tak kecil.
We'll come back. We're discussing rabies.
With Kelantan.
Rabies in Malaysia. If you have a question, give us a call, 777-332-900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet is at BFM Radio. When we come back, I want to find out where the tetanus jab falls into this, because every time you get a dog bite, you say tetanus jab, you know, but now you have something called a PEP, post-exposure prophylaxis, which is something like a vaccine, am I correct?
It is a vaccine.
Okay, so I never knew that existed, but I want to also know why Sarawak doesn't have an immune belt. That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in our Doctor in the House series. Mm-hmm. We're discussing stopping the spread of rabies. We've just got one more victim in Sarawak who, you know, succumbed to rabies. And it's taken that number to 19 since 2017. We're just wondering what's actually going on. It seems to be a lot in Sarawak. Mm. Let's talk about Sarawak, Dr. Vic. I think you've spoken to us about the immune belt. Yep. And, you know, from what I understand, there is no immune belt in Sarawak. Yep. And if it is indeed what we call a rabies epidemic that has been declared in Sarawak, then I'm asking, why is it we don't have an immune belt there?
Oh, okay. The immune belt is currently, for Sarawak, for hundreds of years, they have not recorded any rabies outbreak before. They did not document any rabies among dogs and also humans. But unfortunately, Kalimantan, our neighbouring country part.
See, again,
always the neighbours.
See, these dogs just don't understand what boundaries are. Yeah,
they don't. Sure. They don't carry passport. Maybe we should recommend passport for them.
Should.
So what happened is, way back in 2015-16, apparently there was some heavy outbreak in Kalimantan,
right?
And what happened is that again, when you have a zoonotic disease, one of the drivers of zoonotic disease is land use, agriculture, the development, encroachment, new human settlements, and so on. So what happened when Sarawak and our neighboring country, there was thick
forest.
So usually
the dogs don't cross.
Mm-hmm. They don't cross. Or even though they have rabies, within 10 days they are gone.
Right.
So they just die off. Now when there is new agriculture area,
connectivity
between two sides where you have plantations and so on, we tend to have workers from the other side who comes and works with us. This happens. Sometimes, most of the plantation, they have dogs as well.
Yeah.
Again, when you do a control in one area, they move.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an hypothesis saying that there's movement between dogs. When there is control at the other side, they move on to our side, and they establish a canine outbreak among the dogs in
so those area. Are recent developments that actually perhaps might explain certain outbreaks.
I'm not sure how long the development has taken place, but any zoonotic disease, again, these are the drivers that will create an opportunity for the agents to move to another host or spill over to the humans.
Right.
It's like deforestation, isn't it? You expose new viruses and bacteria that have been living in that part of the forest, and you deforest, and then you live in there and you're exposed to it.
You see, when in the forest, there is a natural
balance
where there is a host, main host, and then the agents, the infective agents.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a equilibrium between those hosts.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is that when you deforest or when you move to a new place, the natural host reduces.
Right.
The agents are still there. Mm.
For
example, malaria nolosai.
Right.
Right? Humans are getting it now. Because why?
This is the monkey malaria.
Monkey malaria. Those hosts were monkeys. Mosquito doesn't know, oh, you are a human, don't bite you. Go and look for a monkey to bite.
Right.
As long as there's a new host, the mosquitoes want blood, they bite or beat the humans. So this is what we must understand when we are dealing with all these diseases, so that we predict, we can pre-predict what are the diseases that might cross over from the wildlife to the...
That's what keeps you busy in your job, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What else? I mean, obviously you mentioned about, you know, monkey malaria, rabies. What other kind of like zoonotic diseases do you focus on in your department?
We have brucella, people drinking unpasteurized goat's milk. They say there's a medicinal value for this unpasteurized milk for jaundice, but they and other medicinal value, but they don't know they will get a brucella infection.
Really?
So other than that, we have leptospirosis.
Uh-huh.
We have
that's kind
many,
of under your jurisdiction
as
well.
Yes. So we have multiple zoonotic diseases that happens throughout the year.
Right.
And all these drivers are in place for us to.
And these are diseases that are reportable to Ministry of Health, so that you need to know what is the extent of the epidemic.
Yes. You see, there are certain diseases that are gazetted under the Act.
Right,
342 Act. For example, if zoonotic disease is rabies, leptospirosis, and malaria, and so on. But those which are not gazetted, what we do is we administratively make it notifiable. For example, brucella, melioidosis, and so on. So over a period of time, we will always see what is the pattern of diseases, zoonotic diseases that happens among the human population. So the most important thing is that our people must be aware when you are doing certain activities. Example, if you are a farmer, you are doing certain things, you are exposed to certain zoonotic diseases.
Mm-hmm.
If you are doing extreme events, you might be exposed to animals and so on and so on. So this is what is very important for people to be aware of those diseases that are being around the geographical area, because for the past 100 years, we have 1,274 pathogens being reported for humans. And 60% are zoonotic in nature.
Oh.
And out of that 60%, 70% are from wildlife.
You know, I'm very curious and I'm very concerned now because if you talk about the Klang Valley, a lot of us now are into trekking and hiking and we've identified many hills around the Klang Valley where people go in now and trek and hike.
Yeah.
Now, what should we be concerned about?
Most important thing, when you are going trekking and so on, don't interact with the animals.
The
right?
Monkeys.
Don't interact with them, first thing. Second thing is you always must, if let's say you have to interact with animals, make sure you clean your hand. Don't expose your eyes, nose, and mouth area to their fluids and so on, because we don't know what they carry. As just now when we were mentioning about dog bite, it's not only rabies the dog transmit. The flora in the dog's mouth, they have aerobes and anaerobes plus gram-negative and gram-positive multiple organism that is inside their mouth, which some we don't have exposed to and we don't have immunity towards it.
Hence, does that answer Mira's question about tetanus?
Yeah.
What about tetanus? Every time I know dog bite, go get tetanus jab. Nobody told me about PEP.
Okay. So for this part of Malaysia that is Kuala Lumpur, we don't have a rabies outbreak. Hopefully, we don't have.
Okay.
The only rabies outbreak, big outbreak that we had is way back in 1952. KL had a very big rabies outbreak among the canine.
Mm-hmm.
And so here in Peninsula, generally a wound can be infected by any soil.
Mm.
Why we give tetanus? Because the tetanus spora, the Corynebacterium tetani, is available in the soil.
Right.
And they can be there for years. So when you have a wound, the anti-tetanus stops you from getting tetanus.
Right.
And as you know, tetanus, people can still die.
Yeah.
Because of the spasm, respiratory failure, cardiorespiratory failure, and so on. So that's the reason why people are offered anti-tetanus when they have certain kind of wound.
What about a dog bite? Why dog bite?
Well, depends. If your bite, it can be at your lower limb. You'll be walking out at, you know, your wound, a raw wound, you can walk out to the soil. Some people do. My father does gardening sometimes. You know, that's the thing. Sometimes when you handle soil in your hand, we don't wear gloves and handle soil. And you can't predict whether that tetanus there or not. We don't take the soil and see under the... analyze that before.
I mean, just for practical reasons, like Mira was talking about, if somebody gets like scratches or bite from wild animals, such as monkeys in Gassing Hill, and then compared to somebody who's gone trekking in East Malaysia, what should they do?
No. First thing is that any animal bite, you must wash the wound with running water minimum 15 minutes. Use a soap.
Okay.
Or a whatever, antiseptic or what.
Okay.
The caveat is 15 minutes.
Right.
Nothing less. Running water. Not use a basin, put in a water.
Immerse the
wound. So that would... First is reduce the concentration of any bacteria or virus that has been implanted into the wound.
Okay.
That's why we use running water and wash.
Okay, first
as
thing.
As immediately as possible.
Okay.
Now, next we come is if it's a very big wound, tear, multiple, extensive bleeding, they should cover with a cloth, a clean cloth, come over to the clinics or hospital for further management. So that is the first thing they should do. Next is visit the doctors to assess your wound.
Okay.
Is it involving the tendon or is it involving the vessels or is it involving the, what do you call, the skin or the muscle and so on.
Will you administer a PEP if I'm bitten by a monkey in Gassing, for an example?
No, I won't.
Because this is not an area where...
First thing is that monkeys are not reservoir to rabies. First.
Okay.
And you see, they are not a predator type of animal compared to the dogs, the fox, the musang and so on, where their main way is to bite. Whereas monkeys, they don't...
Generally, unless they're threatened.
Yeah, they're threatened.
Okay.
Usually, wild animals, they are afraid of humans. So, coming back to these rabies, you see there is sylvatic rabies, there is canine rabies. Sylvatic rabies goes among the wildlife and also the bats. So, what they say, if you can see a wildlife that is nocturnal in the daytime... Then there is some kind of
psychological issues.
Some kind of change in their time here. What do you call how they assess?
So hallucinating.
Hallucinating. So that means there's something wrong with their brain. That's why we always emphasize that if there, it is a bad bite, then bad bite. Then we should consider whether to provide PEP or not. So that comes into the sylvatic, sylvatic cycle. Whereas the canine cycle, we have to assess whether the dogs there are infected or whether there is an outbreak or whether your adjacent area has outbreaks and so on. So this involves a lot of effort, time, money and so on. So basically it's a collaboration between how we notify, how we inform our medical doctors or how we receive this information or notification from the doctors telling us that there's an animal bite in that area.
So are you saying then that the reason the Klang Valley is possibly free of rabies is because of good management?
One is good management. Next is we have an immune belt. about 400 miles away.
That blocks any migration of any disease downwards.
So, because we are not near the border.
That's right, yeah. Okay.
But
see, Singapore is good like that, isn't it?
But today, anybody can travel.
That's true. Yes. Because this is another thing I would like to ask you. Is that apart from anybody can be can travel, and people can also import things into us. Like, for example, dogs and also meat and that sort of thing. Okay. What sort of chances of a new disease being brought into Malaysia, zoonotic disease being brought to Malaysia through our borders?
Basically, we have a very good very good system at the borders where we have makis. Makis is a authority that looks into animals that are brought into our shores, and also meat. Usually they will look for like a certificate telling that where is this meat from, is it free of these kind of diseases, and is it a designated farm and so on. So all these are in place. Uh-huh. That's why we freely can eat chicken lah.
Right.
But most of our chicken is from here. Our border in some areas.
Are you sure? Okay, we'll talk about it some other time.
You would know, right? Because that's your job.
No, today is rabies. Today is only rabies.
We've completely digressed. But we have some borders that are porous. Yeah. And there would be.
So that's why we have an immune belt in the northern side where the dogs are vaccinated. What happens is that they have immunity towards rabies. Mm. So when there's a dog that has has established rabies infection, comes over to this side and bites them, they don't develop the rabies infection.
And that spare all the dogs in anywhere south of the immune belt to be vaccinated with rabies, like routinely?
Yeah, yeah. Every year, you see, according to OIE, you get a herd immunity among the canines when you have completed 70% of the dog population in that geographical area.
Understood. Which we have.
Yes, definitely.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well done. So let's move to Sarawak. We've been completely digressing from Sarawak. We'll come back after the next market update on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in the studio with me. We're both being, enlightened.
Overwhelmed.
About dog bites and monkeys.
Immune belts.
Yes, immune belts, Joining us, Dr. Vigneshwaran Muthu. He's a Senior Principal Assistant Director at the Zoonosis and Sector Disease Control Division from the Ministry of Health. We're trying to figure out how to stop the spread of rabies. Yeah. It's been an epidemic that's been declared in Sarawak in 2017. The total number of cases, deaths from rabies up to June this year has been 19. Three in particular this year. So what are we doing in Sarawak? What has been, why haven't you established an immune belt in Sarawak, and how are you managing this situation? It's now an epidemic.
Well, as you all know, we in the Ministry of Health, we receive cases that has been bitten by animals, and also we receive cases that previously has been bitten by animals, and they don't they should do what they're supposed to do, like wound washing, come to our clinic, and so on. They develop rabies 3 weeks to 3 months incubation period. So basically, what Ministry of Health we do is provide awareness, what they should do when they have a bite, and then work closely with the local department of veterinary services, because the veterinary services in Sarawak is a standalone under the state government, whereas here in Peninsula Malaysia we have a different DVS running.
So structural administration is slightly different.
Slightly different. So what happened was earlier they thought that Sarawak is free of rabies. Now rabies has gone into the canine, and when you move these dogs from one place to another, we don't know the dog has rabies in the body, and once they develop when you have moved the dogs somewhere. Right. So what we have found out is there have been a lot of dog movement when the control started.
Right.
So this has amplified the situation. Because why? When the dog goes to the other area, mm-hmm. it gets infected, it passes over to the other dogs.
So, you know, the last time this kind of potentially can get out of hand in Penang, this controversial issue of culling occurs. Like, is that a way of controlling it?
No. You see, the main work that has been done is mass vaccination.
Mass vaccination.
Can you explain to me? And, you know, culling was the way in Penang many years ago.
Not anymore.
Not at all.
They have an excellent system in place now to manage the strays. But why is culling not an option?
Because when we see the mechanics of how the dogs are being infected, mm-hmm. just now we explained, the dog can be incubating for 6 months. So we might not know which dog has the virus, which dog does not have the virus. When there is a sudden outbreak, what happens is that the first thing that the Department of Veterinary Services or the OIE recommendation is to do a mass dog vaccination.
Okay.
So mass dog vaccination plus population control.
Even the stray dogs?
No. You see, the veterinarians can identify which dog is ill and which dog is healthy.
Understand.
First thing. And then when you have a disseminated infection that you can't predict, then you have to do some measures of population control. Because, as you know, the more, reservoir host is there in that geographically, they will tend to pass to the same host and also pass to the humans and other animals like cats and so on. Mm-hmm. So once we also have cats that are positive rabies. Mm-hmm. So there's a spillover to a different host. So one of the main activity is mass vaccination, mm-hmm. so that we get a 70% or more of dogs that are protected or develop antibody towards the rabies.
So you haven't heard immunity. Yeah, herd immunity as well.
But when this kind of activity is being done, at the same time, certain dogs might show signs, symptoms of rabies. So when they show signs of rabies, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to do dog population control. Mm-hmm. And this is case-to-case basis. Mm-hmm. It's not all the dogs being controlled. No.
That's right.
So basically, the identification will be done. And at the same time, when we have bite cases that comes to our hospitals, mm-hmm. or clinics, we will inform our counterparts where they can go and identify if they were able to identify the dog and observe the dog.
You know, what have been some of your challenges? I mean, you've spoken about how with, clearing of land, this brings about the crossing over of dogs from, over the boundaries into Malaysia, into Sarawak. And then what are some of your other challenges in managing rabies in Sarawak?
Other challenges would be the people not coming for vaccination, some taboo, the thinking that if the dog is being vaccinated, it will lose his manhood for male dogs.
This is a very human thing. It's got to be the males. What do you think, George? It's got to be about male
I'm
thinking.
Standing. Even
the dog will not be fierce anymore, cannot be a watchdog and so on.
Let us now impose our manhoodness on the animals.
I'm speechless.
So and then at the same time they move their dogs from one place to another
just to avoid the vaccine.
Control. So people must understand when there is a dog population control or mass vaccination, please ask the right question and please get what are they supposed to do.
I think
pre-assume.
Well, I'm making assumption that. Yeah. I think awareness, because right. rabies is such a rare disease.
I just want to laugh because you know why? You look after that area.
I do look after that area because I'm just trying to make assumption here, right? Yeah. Okay, I think apart from worrying about their pets might lose their manhood. And then I think the other thing is that people probably misunderstand that their pets might get culled, you know, in an area where there's rabies being declared. Correct. You know, because even for someone in our situation, we assume that in an area where there is uncertainty, all these pets will be killed for population control. No. So now, with program like this, you highlighted that actually the way it's not population control, the way is vaccinating the healthy ones so that the healthy ones don't continue to be the reservoir. Yeah. So, you know, in many ways, I think, you know, if we don't really understand that well in the comfort of rabies-free Semenanjung, and then in the area where you have fear, uncertainty of epidemic, Sarawak, you always get that uncertainty that whether your pets is going to be pulled away and be killed off.
Yeah, that's another one, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. What about logistics? Do we have the logistics, proper logistics in place to actually manage this?
Yeah. You see, the Sarawak state government has fully given full cooperation to the Department of Veterinary Services in Sarawak. Plus, NAPMA has also come in and given
assistance.
And also our Semenanjung Malaysia Department of Veterinary Services, they are going there to assist them to do whatever is supposed to be done.
Okay. So basically, why did we have one death in June?
Well, again, we cannot predict which dog has the virus before we achieve the 70% vaccination.
Would you know how much you've done so far? How many dogs have you vaccinated?
Sarawak should know how many they have done, but the most important thing is that how many dogs you have in your area, that you must know. As long as you know the denominator of the population, you can always calculate the 70% coverage. And with that 70% coverage, once you know the denominator, you can calculate the man hours, how many dogs you have to vaccinate, how many vaccines you need for the dogs, and how many man hours you need for your staffs to be there to complete the yearly vaccination program.
You look all charged up. Is this because you just came back from a rabies simulation exercise?
I'm always charged up. I'm only decharged.
And this is on Friday. Imagine him on Monday.
You know exactly what happens now. What is the simulation exercise? I want to know.
You guys are very lucky because you're going to get the first message. So we had a rabies.
Always, this is exclusive.
Yeah.
Right. Exclusive.
We had a regional rabies simulation exercise where we had we have a close collaboration between Department of Veterinary Services Malaysia, Ministry of Health. MyHoon is a Malaysian network of universities, One Health universities, and we also have ASEAN members from this region. There are 10 countries. We had about 5 country representatives. What we do is we simulate the rabies outbreak, where we chose Langkawi because after 2000,
good hotels there.
No. Basically, it was all work.
All right.
After 2015's outbreak in Perlis, Kedah, and also Penang, our Department of Veterinary Services have gazetted Pulau Langkawi, because it's higher than Perlis. If you geographically see our map, it's higher than Perlis and it's nearer to the southern part of our neighbor country.
Okay.
Gazetted Langkawi as an immune belt state. That is in 2016. So this year, what we did a simulation where how does Langkawi Department of Veterinary Services and also Ministry of Health facilities handle an outbreak.
Wow.
So we had a very good simulation, and we had a lot of learning, experience and close collaboration between multiple sectors, multi-discipline, and also it was a very good event.
Yeah, this is a way to identify shortcomings and then, you know, protect the population.
Correct. Very important question. Were the people from Sarawak there?
Yeah. We had veterinarians from Department of Veterinary Service Sarawak and also Sabah. They were there, and we had a very good session.
Okay, fantastic. So you're all ready for a rabies outbreak?
We are always ready for zoonotic diseases.
Zoonotic diseases.
What are you most afraid of? You're in the front line. You see this. You know the data. You know the statistics. You know what's coming out. Which zoonotic disease do you think we should be concerned about?
Well, we are prepared for any zoonotic diseases because we have the experts in place. We have support from WHO. We have support from OIE, FAO, and so on.
What do you think we are very blasé, the Malaysian people are blasé about? And we take very lightly about zoonotic diseases.
Well,
dengue.
Brucella, leptospirosis.
So let's very quickly. I want to digress by leptospirosis. That is from rat urine.
Well, you see, leptospirosis, the bacteria is in the soil and also in certain hosts, and rodents. This bacteria becomes a host in the kidney of the rodents.
Okay.
So intermittently, what they do, they come out through their urine. And rodents, when they eat at certain place, they put their GPS mark by urinating. So that place becomes sometimes high concentration with leptospirosis. And usually this happens around, recreational area.
Yes.
Yeah, at home where we don't place our food stuffs correctly. There are rats coming there.
So are you saying we have in a way contributed to the spread
basically,
of leptospirosis?
Basically, it's we.
It's always us.
Yeah.
Did you hear about this rodent's GPS map on the urine? I love that.
We don't go around urinating telling that this is our territory.
Speak for yourself. Some people do. Or GPS to give
I'm
back
having
to
a word with you after this, George. What do you know that
I'm
don't know?
I'm a urologist,
know?
Right?
Yeah, if you eat petai, the petai smell will be there.
Okay, to lead you
then,
back to
then
your
somebody
GPS.
Will go in, somebody add the petai.
Okay,
let's not go, let's not go to durian. Okay, okay, your message on rabies.
Right. Whoever has a animal bite, the first thing is that assess your wound, wash your wound with running water, 15 minutes with a soap, mild soap, because rabies virus is very labile. As long as he's exposed to the sun, exposed to a soft soap, it dies off, or you dilute it with running water. After that, come and see our doctors. We have many doctors around.
Question, does the anti-rabies provide lifelong immunity?
Well, you see, when there will be antibodies in your body throughout your life. But when you get a next bite, usually the 4 dose becomes 2 dose. Just to boost your antibodies. So once you get a rabies vaccine, it's a lifelong, you can find antibodies in your body throughout your life.
Last question. What if it's a stray that we can no longer locate after the bite? Will the doctor not administer the vaccine? Is there anything that we can do?
So again, whatever decision made by the clinician to the person, we leave it to the clinician. And let's say a doc, when the Department of Veterinary Services, the description of the dog says that the dog is unhealthy and they couldn't find a dog, what they will do, sampling in that area to find dogs that are unhealthy. As we know, rabies can happen among the canine very unknowingly.
Yeah.
So what they do sampling, and based on that sampling, if they find any dog that is positive in that area, they will totally declare it is an outbreak. So all the system is in place in Semenanjung Malaysia.
Fantastic. Okay, we just need to work on Sarawak.
Yeah.
Let's hope
we are working very hard.
Let's hope we don't want to have you back, because every time we have you back, it means there's
an outbreak
somewhere.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's right.
So fingers crossed.
You're so disappointed. You say we don't want to have you back.
No, we don't. For very good reason.
No, for very good reason. If everything is under control, I'll be jobless.
Yeah. No, that's all not right, true, okay. Because we need you to keep it under
actually,
control.
Actually, I mean, to be truthful, I mean, when I was driving here, I was a little bit concerned, you know, with 50 years since the landing in the moon, you know, tomorrow, and then in the space age, and then I was thinking that why do we still have rabies in our country? I'm from Kelantan. Of course, we thought about, you know, but after listening to you today, I really feels safe that we have zoonotic department to defend our borders with immune belts, even though the pets or the dogs have no no passports to cross the border.
You forgot about the simulation exercise. Don't play.
And the urine GPS.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mira,
for joining us. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, and Dr. Vigneshwaran Muthu, senior principal assistant director, Zoonosis Sector Disease Control Division, Ministry of Health, on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.